welcome. This is From the Bookshelves of Forbes India. I am Divya Shekhar. Also joining me in the studio today is my colleague Kathakali Chanda, who's Forbes India's sports correspondent. And together, we'll be in conversation with a very special guest. This cricketer is a legendary Australian all-rounder who has represented his country in more than 300 games. He scored over 10,000 international runs and taken nearly 300 wickets. These days, you see him on your television screens or on your mobile phones as a commentator for the Indian Premier League games. I'm talking about none other than Shane Watson. Welcome to From the Bookshelves, Shane. It's lovely to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So your book, The Winner's Mindset, has been recently launched in India. It talks about building mental resilience, and you use examples and experiences from your own life to give very actionable and practical tips about how to overcome failure and how to overcome fear. Why did you have the need to write this book?
Yeah, look, I feel I was very fortunate to be able to meet someone who gave me this information that I was 34 years old at a stage in my career where I wasn't performing anywhere near my best, and this guy who I went to see to be able to who had this mental skills information. Once I went and spent time with him and spent 2 days going through this information, it's information that I hadn't heard before, and even being through with around mental skills coaches, sports psychologists in the past. Over the previous sort of like 20 years of being in the Australian career pathway, I never had access to this type of information. That it was really simple to understand, it was really actionable, and from that moment on, I knew that I had to find a way to be able to get this information out to as many people as possible, because unfortunately this information is not readily available. It's one of the mental skills and understanding how your mind works so you can get out of your own way to perform at your best consistently. That information is not readily available, and it should be.
Right.
It should be available at schools. It should be from a teenager. It should be available to anyone who wants to be able to try and master their mind.
Right.
We're all performing all the time, so we all want to be able to understand how to be able to get out of our own way to be able to perform at our best, which a lot of the time, even with the best intentions, we're so good at sabotaging our own performances.
Right. This person that you're referring to, is it mental performance coach Dr. Jacques Dallaire?
That's right, yes. Dr. Jacques Dallaire, I got connected up to him through an Aussie IndyCar champion, Will Power, who's now won 2 IndyCar championships. It was a random meeting at an event in Sydney, Australia, and he'd been going through a similar experience with his performances. And his fear of getting in the car. I was going through a very similar experience over the previous 9 months of the fear that had come into my performance after the tragic death and accident of Phil Hughes being killed on the cricket field. So we were going through a similar experience when it comes to the fear that had come into our performances. He was working with Jacques Dallaire. Dr. Jacques Dallaire, who his background, he's been doing this for 45 years, working with high-performing people, and initially started in Formula One, NASCAR, IndyCar, Special Forces, fighter pilots, these people where he's working with these people. If they make a mistake, it can be the difference between life and death.
Right.
So I was looking for answers. I was at a stage where I was going to retire at 34 because I knew I could perform nowhere near my best. I was going to retire, and I was desperate to be able to try, or desperate to be able to find some information that could help me, just turn me around.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nothing to lose, so I flew over to Charlotte, North Carolina, where Dr. Jacques Dallaire is based, spent 2 days with him, and there's information that I hadn't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, the information that he told me was so easy for me to get my head around, and I knew I could turn things around immediately. And Jacques Dallaire knew nothing about cricket, knew nothing about cricket. He knew about high-performance people and how their minds work, and human beings in general, how we sabotage our own performance, but then how to get out of our own way. And from that moment on, things shifted significantly to then, for the next four and a half years, I had some of my best performances of my career. Yeah.
So when specifically with reference to playing the short ball, and I'm asking this because that was your fear, right? What if the short ball hit me and caused a fatal damage? How did you implement this while playing the short ball in the latter half of your career, when after speaking to Dr. Dallaire?
Yeah, so the first thing that I understood is I have to put the right thing in my mind at the right time. So, and I have that control. I had to make sure that the timing of the right word. So for me, some people, when it comes to cricket, the bat, and from a batting perspective, a lot of batters say, watch the ball. As the ball comes out, they say, watch the ball. Whereas for me, the word was aggressive. That was my word, which like got me ready to go. So that was the word that I put into my mind, the thought at the right time as the ball came out. If I did it a bit too early, then there's a chance that the wrong thought could come in. So the timing was so important. And by putting, for me, the word aggressive into my mind, that meant that then my unconscious mind would take over and my natural, my instincts of playing the short ball or playing fast bowling would then just take over. But I needed to retrain that, the short ball, and work on it, which I spent 6 weeks working on it, to be able to have that deep confidence that my technique was as good as it possibly could be. So I had that deep down confidence that I was going to be okay. And my instincts and my natural reactions were going to be fine. I was going to get into good positions and less chance of getting in a position where I could get hurt. So that was the process. So by putting those few things together, even from then on, when I knew I was facing a fast bowler, I'd still feel a bit like uncomfortable because I knew what could happen. But I knew how to override it. I knew how to override that like anxiety that was there by putting the right thing into my mind at the right time, and then it never affected my performance from that moment on because I knew I had that control. I could even, and I'd talk about it. Like I was teaching this information even while I was still playing. So that information could have gone back to my competitors that I was up against, knowing that I had in the past a fear of the short ball. But because I was in control of my thoughts, even if they knew that that was there in the past, that still did not affect my performance at all. So that's why I was comfortable talking about it.
Right. You also mentioned in the book about how you used to get extremely angry every time you were dismissed in a match, and how you used to, and I quote, blow up the dressing room. So how did you come to terms with or make peace with that temperament? And even after retirement in your current life, are there specific strategies that you use to calm down or deal with your anxieties?
Yeah, so getting out the sort of like frustration out, letting the frustration out in the change room after I got out, that was one, a learned behavior. Because one, I felt like, and I learned it along the way, I felt like you had to look like you really cared. So by like getting frustrated, like yelling out or throwing your gloves or whatever it was, I had to look like I really cared. Okay, even though I really did, but there's other people who didn't do that, who just sat down quietly, but they cared as much as I did. But that was sort of a learned behavior from a teenager, really. So even after knowing this information, sometimes you do have to let your emotion out a bit, but then it gets to a stage quite quickly where you've just got to then catch your thoughts and redirect it. I don't like losing. I hate being defeated.
Right.
So if I got defeated, which from a batting perspective, it's getting out. So it felt like I lost. I've got to let a little bit of that frustration out, but straight away, more constructively, I'd go through three questions: what happened, why did it happen, and what can I do in the lead up to the next game to be able to reduce the chance of that happening again. And once I stepped through those three questions, then it was fine. I still had to catch myself if I started to like dig a bit and get frustrated. So that was more during my playing days. Now in the next phase of my life, the one thing that I'm incredibly aware about, even though I certainly at times I get like frustrated, but I'm so aware of what my thoughts are now, and now no matter what, if there's something going on, if I'm overthinking a situation, or if I'm getting frustrated and emotional, I catch that thought and redirect it to an anchor. And my every individual, every human being needs to have an anchor that they put their mind to, they put their thoughts to be able to get their mind on neutral,
yeah,
and get them back to the present.
Yeah.
So for me, my anchor is having a song in my head. Oh. That was my anchor that I had when I played in the end, yeah, after I knew this information. But now that's the one thing that I go to when I know I'm starting to overthink something or I'm getting my emotions are starting to come up.
Right.
Different people have different anchors. Some people have their like focus on their breathing. Some people just focus on something out in the distance. Some cricketers use chewing gum as a way to sort of bring themselves back to the present. And an anchor is just a technique to be able to bring yourself back to the present. So when you're present, you're not thinking about what's happened or what might happen.
Mm.
And that's really what an anchor is. It's just to get your mind on neutral. So that's the technique that is so unbelievably powerful that everyone needs to define what their anchor is, whether it's one or whether it's a couple that they have ready to go, because that's their way of being able to just catch it and redirect it. So the anxiety either doesn't build up because you're not thinking about or worrying about what might happen.
Right.
Or if the emotion's starting to build up, you can just catch it and redirect it to that as well.
You said you get anchored with a song, right? Mm-hmm. What song is that?
It depends on what I've been listening to.
Oh.
That's a question I get asked a lot. Yeah.
What are you listening to now?
At the moment, I'm listening to Chris Stapleton. I love my country music because I find that very soothing for the soul. So any Chris Stapleton song at the moment. But yeah, so it just depends on what I'm listening to at that point in time. But I'll always have one or two songs, like a playlist sort of ready to go to just jam into my mind.
So music grounds you.
Absolutely. That's a way for me to be able to just get back to the present.
Yeah.
And put my mind on neutral.
Yeah.
So I'm not overthinking anything. I'm not allowing my emotion to sort of boil over, which as humans, it does sometimes. We're all human. We do. That happens at times, but it's understanding how to control it more often than not.
Yeah. I mean, putting your mind on neutral or blocking out the noise that's there outside can be so important. Like, for instance, if you take the case of Mumbai Indian skipper Hardik Pandya versus the home fans right now. So what are your suggestions or strategies about how one can block out all that noise, all those externalities, to really focus on what's important?
Yeah, that's the, when it all boils down to mastering your mind and mastering mental skills, it really comes down to creating this like cocoon around you, this bulletproof cocoon around you, where anything outside just like bounces off it.
Yeah.
So and that's by understanding how to control your thoughts, by understanding how to, it's like putting headphones on.
Mm.
So nothing outside of what's going around can get into your mind at all.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievably challenging to be able to do. And it takes a lot of work to be able to, and a lot of like consistent work over like a few years to be able to build that really like bulletproof cocoon around you. But once you do build those skills, then it doesn't matter what situation arises. Nothing's going to get inside of that bubble to be able to infiltrate your mindset, which then could affect your performance.
Yeah.
And right now we talk about Hardik Pandya. Well, this is a huge challenge for him because there is a lot of noise.
Yeah.
There is a hell of a lot of noise around him at the moment, whether that's the local fans in Mumbai Indians that are booing him, whether that's his own thoughts that are going on, trying to find his feet back into the Mumbai Indians with some of the noise that's around. Around performance alone as well. But when you've mastered your mind, which takes a lot of time, then those things in the end, again, it's like putting headphones on. It's just nothing comes in for you being the best that you possibly can. That doesn't mean you're going to get the best results every single time, but you're giving yourself the very best chance to be able to get the best results that you possibly can. And that's all you can do.
Right. I want to steer the conversation back to training the mind, the point that you mentioned earlier, and because it's very difficult and in my opinion almost impossible to not think about what's on your head at any given point, right? It's like how Ricky Ponting also told you that, you know, when you tell a bowler not to bowl a wide, he or she, that's what plays on their mind, bowling a wide. So, you know, I also ask this in context of the young or first-time captains in the IPL game, right? There have been so many close finishes. So how can a captain, or rather how should a captain marshal his resources, in the dying overs of a game, especially when one or two balls can change the outcome of the match?
Yeah. And that's the incredible thing about the mind is around if you give someone the negative side to it, so like don't bowl wide or don't make a mistake, that's actually what they're thinking about. Yeah. Don't do it. So you're actually thinking about it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you give someone a different direction, which is this is the ball you need to bowl and this is how you bowl it by knowing the bowler, this is how you execute it, then it empowers that person to go, okay, this is one that I'm bowling and this is how I bowl it, bang. And you're just fully focused on the process, the execution of it. And it's such a simple, thing, but it has such a huge impact.
Yeah.
Don't bowl a wide. And that's where you're running and going, oh, don't bowl it, or don't make a mistake, compared to this is the ball that you need to bowl, which has got nothing to do with a wide. You haven't mentioned a wide.
Mm.
This is the ball you need to bowl. This is how you bowl it. Well, you know how to bowl it. This is one, so just focus on executing that. And straight away, you've redirected your mind to the right thing to give yourself the best chance of executing your skill.
Yeah.
Whether it's the last over of a T20 game, whether it's the first over, it's actually just taking it control to be fully focused on the execution part and giving yourself the best chance of doing that, not don't make a mistake.
Yeah, like you said, words and tone of your conversation or tone of intent really matters.
Absolutely, yeah, because there's words. Words have layers to it, so the words can mean nothing really if your tone or your body language is different.
Mm.
So, and that's where again, it's understanding the player that you're working with and the individual that you're working with to be able to get the very best out of them. But the most important thing for any leader, whether it's a really experienced leader or a young leader, is just directing that person who's performing to the right thoughts for them to be at their very best. So the wrong thoughts, they're not running, they're not trying to perform,
right,
thinking about, oh, don't stuff up.
You've played a lot of IPL matches with Mahindra Singh Dhoni, mm-hmm, as the captain, the coolest customer, as cool as you can have it. How would he react in these close contests, in the dying overs? What would he tell the bowler, or if he's in the dugout, what sort of instructions would he send out to the batter?
He wasn't really someone to send out instructions from a batting perspective, but as a leader on the field when his bowler was under pressure, he knew his bowlers that he was working with really well. As in, he knew the players that he could leave alone, the bowlers he could leave alone, and knew that they were fine,
yeah,
they were okay under pressure, and they were clear on what they wanted to do and how they wanted to execute it. Or he also knew if as a player who under pressured situations were more chance of getting it a bit wrong and starting to think about and worry about making a mistake.
Mm.
So as soon as he knew it was that type of person, he'd just go up to them and say, okay, this is your field, this is your ball, this is your ball that you're going to bowl, and this is how you do it. And that's it. So he empowered the bowler by not going, don't, like, MS Dhoni would never say, don't make a mistake. You'd see him run up to the bowler from his keeping position. He'd run up to the bowler and say, this is a couple of ball options you can bowl. This is your field. And just execute, just be clear.
Yeah.
So, but he knew the players to be able to do that too, who needed some direction at times. And he also knew the ones that didn't need direction. And that was the incredible skill, the emotional intelligence that MS Dhoni's got to be able to understand what every individual needs. And he reads it very quickly.
Yeah.
Even if it's a new player coming in, he's got a great awareness to be able to pick it up quite quickly.
Right.
And right after the IPL, we're going to go into the T20 World Cup, and it is expected that a lot of the selections of the T20 teams would be based on the IPL performances. Now, when you look at the Indian team, there's just a few certainties and, a lot of contenders for a finite number of slots. So what do these players who are in contention, how do they train their mind? Because at the back of their mind, they're always thinking that one bad performance, a couple of bad performances, that they're going to be pushed at the back end of the line. So how do they deal with this kind of pressure and focus on performance?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about the IPL, because most of the IPL tournaments that I've been around, have played in and have been around, there's always a big Indian selection all the time that happens during the IPL, whether it's in the middle of it, whether it's the back end of the IPL. And I've seen it so many times where, because it's such, obviously it's everyone's desperate to play for India. And everyone is doing everything they can to play for India. And it means so much, of course it does, to everyone, to be able to play for your country and for the Indian players. But you see, I'll talk from a batter's perspective as a starting point. You see the batters at times start to, you can see they're only looking to score runs and stay for long periods of time. Whereas in T20 cricket, yeah, you want to score runs, but you need to do it quickly. Yeah. Whereas the guys, if you can see, aren't doing it that quickly because there's something bigger on the horizon that they're trying to get enough runs to be able to get in the team, where that's actually doing them a disservice. There's less, by them doing that, there's less chance of them actually in the end getting picked. And that's where it just comes down to understanding what process do I need to follow in the lead up to every game, and then ball by ball when I'm out there, to be able to bring the best version of myself. And if I do that, then I give myself the best chance of getting the results I'm looking for and being consistent with those results. But all, which means if I do that ball after ball, game after game, then that gives me the best chance of being able to get selected in those teams. And then that's incredibly hard to do, because what's on the horizon is huge. A World Cup, T20 World Cup, it's huge.
Yeah.
And there's only a certain amount, as you said, there's only a certain amount of spots available, and everyone's desperate to get them. But that's the conundrum that people face is, well, for me to get there and give myself the best chance, I need to do this and not even think about what's on the horizon. I need to be really present and follow my process, my routine in the lead up to each game, and then every moment in every game, follow that to the best of my ability. And if I do that, then I'm a really good chance, and I'm the best chance that I can be to being picked.
So you've played against some of the best, played with and against some of the best players of your times. At that elite level that you're operating, all players sort of exhibit a level of mental resilience which is not common otherwise. But even then, in your opinion, which of your colleagues displayed the best ability to put mind over matter?
Yeah, there was a few that really stand out. And with all these guys I'm going to mention, they discovered it for themselves. As in, they didn't seek out someone to be able to help them find it.
Yeah.
They just, over the circumstances that aligned, where they discovered it and go, oh, that worked, and I'm going to keep doing that because that's good and I'll perform really well. So the one that stands out for me the most is Shane Warne.
Mm-hmm.
He was unbelievably mentally tough. His understanding of the version that he had to bring of himself every ball was incredible. But that took him time. That took him a little bit of time right at the start of his international career. And then he had one game against the West Indies that he talks about, where he bought a version of himself. And he got, I think he got 8 wickets at the MCG.
Oh.
And it's like, okay, I'm just going to bring that every time, because that was amazing. And he just knew, and he just did that every single time he stepped out to play.
Yeah.
Glenn McGrath was another one who discovered what worked and just kept doing that over and over again. And even when there was things outside of his cricket that were going on that he was trying to, him and his wife who passed away, his late wife Jane, who... they were dealing with navigating their way through breast cancer and what was going on there. Even though there's a lot of stuff going on outside of his cricket, his ability to be able to just zero into the best version of himself, like game after game, was something incredible. Ricky Ponting was another one that stands out. His ability to understand what he needed to do. But again, they discovered it by the circumstances aligning to then go, oh, that worked, I'm going to keep doing that. Whereas not everyone in their life has those circumstances aligned to be able to go, oh, that's great, I'll just keep doing that.
Yeah.
And that's where this mental skills information is so powerful because it makes you speed up that learning to be able to discover exactly what works for you to bring the best version of yourself that you can.
Shane, before we let you go, I want to ask you, you've been a cricketer, commentator, now writer. What's next for Shane Watson?
I love being a commentator. It's a lot of fun, especially with a really good group. It's a lot of fun to be able to sort of get my insights from the game across to as many people as possible. If those opportunities, the right opportunities arise, I'll keep doing that for sure. But the mental skills coaching and coaching in general is the thing that gives me the most joy.
Right.
And whether that's one-on-one coaching and mentoring around the mental skills, whether that's coaching in a team environment to be able to help create the right team environment so people don't have to sort of buck the trend to bring the best version of themselves. And with that, getting this mental skills information out to as many people as possible. That's the thing that excites me, and navigating my way through how best to do that, to be able to get it out, because I know this information is not that readily available at all. And that's why sort of my mission now is to be able to get this out to everyone, as many people as possible. So I'm finding ways and I'm working through different ways to be able to get this information out, because I know how life-changing it was for me and for everyone who comes in contact with it.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out to join us on this in our studio today. Thank you so much, Katha, as well. And I really enjoyed reading your book, and I hope others do as well. And to all our viewers, thank you for tuning in. I'm Divya Shekhar. See you next time. This was From the Bookshelves of Forbes India.